Today on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about the time-traveling adventures of Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future. Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Chris Passion, and we're going to be talking about the Back to the Future trilogy. I like all three of these movies. I think they're pretty wonderful, and I brought some guests on, some experts who feel they can talk with some authority about the entire trilogy. Let me go on and introduce my first expert. His name is...
Steven Scalabrino.
Hello, Steven.
Hello.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
So what type of nerd are you, just so our listening audience can kind of get a handle on you?
I would like to say I'm a hodgepodge nerd. I like a lot of things. I like comics, I like video games, I like long walks on the beach. I also enjoy the sci-fi movies of any sort. I'm all over the place.
Okay, and you're dreamy.
And thank you're dreamy.
You know it.
You're so cute on Tinder. What's one of your favorite sci-fi movies?
Sci-fi movies, Star Wars. Duh. Yeah.
Ooh, which is your favorite?
Return of the Jedi. No, Empire Strikes Back. Sorry. Empire Strikes Back.
You really... Okay, you jumped to Return of the Jedi.
I know, because everybody says Return of the Jedi, and it's no.
Actually, I don't know of anyone who says Return of the Jedi.
Really?
That's my favorite.
Okay, good. See?
But yeah. Empire is great.
Yeah.
Empire is great.
Everyone says Return of the Jedi because it's, you know, the last one, and I don't know, but no. Empire because they got, you know, Tauntauns and Hoth and... You know, Yoda. So, yeah. That's
okay.
What I'm talking about.
Well, that's a Star Wars podcast.
I'm sorry.
We'll save that. My next expert sitting right next to Steven is...
Sean Okerberg.
Hello, Sean.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
It's been a while since we've had you on.
I've missed you. I've missed you, too.
What was the last one you were on?
Ender's Game? I missed you, but...
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
We have an excellent Ender's Game podcast. Go listen to it.
It was good.
Cool. What type of nerd are you? I mean, I know what type of nerd you are.
Yeah. Well, I guess mostly movies and video games.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's one of your favorite movies?
I love Star Wars. You know, grew up with that.
Where do you fall with Looper?
Looper's amazing.
Yes. Looper.
Yeah. So good.
Okay.
Looper's.
Are you doing a bit or are you serious?
No, I really.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay. I just threw that out there. I wanted to see what you said.
Good.
He's going into it.
Yeah, Inception. No, I'm with it.
I have a newcomer that has joined us today, and that expert's name is...
Jeremy Connie.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hi.
Yay, new blood.
Yeah.
One more listener.
Yeah. You gotta build it little by little.
I know. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you.
A pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
Since I've never had you on before, why don't you give us a little clue as to what type of nerd you are? What do you enjoy? Video games, movies, comic books? What's your forte?
I love a lot of everything, pretty much. I'm a big fan of getting into pretty much everything in real life, and that goes into my nerd life. I played video games a lot when I was a kid, and I've read comics a lot when I was a kid, and now I do a little bit of each of those things. Love sci-fi. I love learning, which is like the nerdiest thing there can be.
How dare you improve yourself?
I love it. But I love just getting into pretty much everything that nerdiness stuff does.
What is one of your favorite movies? Nerdy movies, preferably.
Nerdy movies? I loved Serenity.
Okay.
I think we all enjoy Serenity.
Oh, yeah.
It's peaceful.
Yeah. Exactly. I loved some of the other time travel movies that I've seen as well, other than Back to the Future.
Time Cop.
Oh, yeah. Anybody seen the one? That was great.
Yes. Was that with Jet Li?
Yeah, with Jet Li. He was killing himself the whole time.
He was killing me the whole time.
Yeah.
Where do you fall on some of the big ones, like Star Wars and... Alien.
I like Star Wars. Uh-huh. Star Wars is not my favorite thing about.
Leave now.
No. I know, right? It's just
you're great.
It's great. It's a great story. It's a great monomyth. But it's not. Like I when it gets to... I'm not the biggest fantasy nerd. I love sci-fi more than I love fantasy.
You should meet my friend Mark.
Oh, yeah?
You should listen to Mark. He's great.
Okay.
Okay, so you're more of a science fiction guy than...
Yeah,
sword-wielding Tolkien.
Like, Heinlein and some of the sci-fi masters.
Bradbury?
When I was... Yes, yes.
Cool.
And Douglas Adams. Douglas Adams is one... That's actually one of my favorite nerd movies because it does a pretty good job of doing Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy pretty well.
Totally.
Okay. My final expert for this podcast is...
Bree Bartman.
Yay! Welcome back, Bree.
Thank you.
So depending on when this airs, you may have been on my podcasts back-to-back.
Okay.
So I'm so glad that I get to have you on as an expert because I feel in the Buffy podcast, we kind of just barreled over you and I felt really bad about that since you were
there. No, I just listened. I enjoyed listening to about Buffy.
Good, good. So what type of nerd are you?
I think I'm a nerd in training. My brothers are big nerds, music nerds, sci-fi nerds, and I just watch what they watch.
Okay.
But I'm definitely a theater nerd. It's kind of off the topic of movies, sci-fi, but
I'm a huge
theater nerd, and I love everything about that. So,
do you have a favorite playwright?
Oof. I think one of my favorite to watch or direct or be in would be Neil Simon.
Okay.
I think that's maybe cliche as a...
We're all,
comedy.
Most of us are actors, so we're really
so.
Judging your answer very
hard. Oh, she didn't say Chekhov.
No. I can appreciate all the playwrights and what they did.
Right.
But, like, Samuel Beckett, and I love how every playwright progressed theater. I appreciate that, but Neil Simon is just, he is what he is.
Okay. Well, this isn't a Neil Simon podcast. This isn't a Star Wars podcast. This is a Back to the Future podcast. And I have brought on an outcast who does not like these movies. You've heard his name before, and that person is...
Pete Novus.
Hey, Pete. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
So, you're my friend, so we can agree to disagree.
No, I don't convince all you guys.
So before we begin the attack on your personal life, I know you're a nerd. People who've listened have... We know you're a PC gamer. What are some of your favorite films?
As far as, like, nerd movies
in
particular?
Yeah, or science fiction, or time travel.
The original Star Wars trilogy.
Of course.
Matrix. Dark City. Which was like The Matrix before The Matrix.
Pre-Matrix.
Matrix.
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 So good.
Where do you fall with Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home?
I like
so
it because they don't pretend to affect history.
True.
It's just like, we're going
to
make a comedy Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
It's like, it's time for that now. Okay, I'll give you that one.
Okay.
Is that the whales one?
Yes.
That's the whales one.
Whales.
Now,
you've seen
Back to the Future, right?
Oh, yes.
You've seen the entire trilogy.
All three.
Did you see them in theater?
Maybe one of them I did.
Okay.
I know I saw them all around the time that they were coming out.
Okay.
More likely on TV, because we didn't go to that many movies when I was a kid. But yeah.
And you're not a fan?
No. I mean, they were fine in the mid-80s when I was 12.
Okay.
But I don't think you know.
Do you feel that it's aimed at a younger audience? Or?
Oh yeah, I feel like they were aimed at 12-year-olds in the mid-80s.
Interesting. So they were
like,
aimed at you specifically.
There's so much nervous laughter going on right now.
Well,
no.
It helps that I identify as a 12-year-old now.
Yeah,
still,
that's right.
So it's
like I feel like a 12-year-old kid watching those movies now would be like, oh, fun things are happening. But they wouldn't get, like, 90% of, like, the cultural references.
We'll talk about whether it holds up.
Yeah.
Are there... surely there are other movies from your youth that you can go back and watch that you still enjoy.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, I feel like the first Back to the Future movie, it's fine. It's entertaining. It is what it is. And then I think they just descend from there. It's like a spiraling slope down.
For those who can't see him, Pete's face is turning really red right now.
Because everybody's like turning.
Yes.
Okay. What do you feel doesn't work about them? Or is there, or, like, if, yeah. Like, why doesn't it work for you?
I'm I'm a little too intellectual with my nerdity a lot of times. And there's really weird inconsistencies with the way these movies handle the consequences of time travel.
That's just interesting. Bugs me.
Okay. Like to the extent that like major characters are affected by changing their own past in very different ways. Yeah, and I feel like more and more they gave up on like the idea of the movie, which is, oh, you can accidentally screw up your own past, and they just got into like, we're gonna make silly adventure movies. Yeah, like I like the first one because it feels more grounded in a setting, and the others are like, where else could we make this movie? Flying cars! The Old West!
All right. Hold on to those, because I'm going to turn to you periodically and say, why is this moment stupid?
All right.
But you've already brought up some interesting things that I'd like to talk about. But let's take a step back. Real quick, in the listening audience, if you have no clue what these movies are, the Back to the Future trilogy, the first film was released in 1985, directed by Robert Zemeckis, score by Alan Silvestri, starring Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Thomas F. Wilson, Leah Thompson, and Crispin Glover. Written by Zemeckis and Bob Gale after they had a conversation, essentially had the idea of meeting their parents in high school and whether they'd be friends with them or not, and that's where the idea for the movie came from. Huge commercial success, grossed $383 million worldwide, which is probably actually not that great now, but in 1985, that was really good. And then the movie was not meant to have a sequel, but who's the production company? This isn't Fox.
Universal.
Is it? Universal. Mm-hmm. Decreed that they make two sequels, so they did. And each...
They wanted a trilogy.
And both part two and part three did very, very well. Although I think the first film is still probably the highest grossing. But part two and three also grossed very highly. I don't have specific numbers written down. And all three films have won critical acclaim and generally very positive reviews.
Plus the ride at Universal Studios is very fun.
Oh, yes. And that, I mean, that is something that we should mention. Like, it spawned a TV series, rides.
Mm-hmm. Series is cool.
Video games now.
Video games now. Yes. I don't know if the DeLorean sold any better, but...
I think it did for the times that the movies were out. Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. So let's talk about the first film. Who saw this in theater? Did anyone see this in theater?
I did.
What'd you think, buddy?
Well, I liked it. I still have this memory of... because I saw it with my dad.
Okay.
And I remember going... going back home and starting to tell my mom about it, and then my dad left to go to the grocery store or something, and he came back however many hours later, and I was still telling my mom about it. Like, I was so excited. I must have been about 10 when it came out. And I'm sure I retold it in detail.
Okay.
So I loved it.
What did you love about it?
Probably at that point, I loved the adventure of it.
Okay.
As I've gotten older, I like the story of it more, and I like other things as, you know, I think it's held up and as I've gotten older.
Okay. My other experts, you guys said you didn't see this in theater, but did any of you see this when it came out or around the 80s and mid-80s?
Oh,
or
yeah.
86 or 87? Steven?
Yeah, I saw it when it came out. I just didn't see the theaters.
Okay. What'd you think?
I loved it as a kid. I mean, it had everything I needed as a young child. You can't see this on a podcast, but I'm looking right at that man over there. So yes.
Can you elaborate a little more on?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, all the themes that a kid can understand with and relate to were in the movie. You know, dealing with bullies, dealing with
dealing with bullies is you hit them in high school and then you have a better truck as an adult.
That's the whole story right there. Sums it up. We don't even talk anymore. Podcast over. There it is. Punch your bully, get a truck. Story done. It's very general themes, and it's just, you know, rock and roll was in there, you know.
Huey Lewis in the news,
skateboarding. I mean, come on. It was like everything that a kid was like, this is so cool. I want to be Marty McFly and have a crazy fun scientist who I can do crazy science experiments and go back in time.
Yeah, like, and being 10 years old, like, he was a teenager, and so I kind of idealized teenagers at that, you know, because they're a little older and they're cool.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
All right, hold on to that, because I want to talk about the characters. Jeremy, Bree, what were your thoughts when you first saw the film?
Well, I can't remember exactly when I first saw it,
okay,
but it was probably sometime in the 90s, since I was only 6 when 1990 rolled around. I probably wouldn't understand it.
Freaking psycho.
When I was in the 80s. But what I loved about it, if I can articulate my younger self right, was just how well it was in the storyline was interweaved. So it was a more complicated idea presented well to me as a kid. Like, a bunch of different stuff happens, and it all, like, doesn't seemingly come together until two-thirds of the way through the movie, or even at the very end. And as a kid, I couldn't see all the parts moving as I could now, and see how they all naturally come together. It was an amazing experience at the time, where it's like, I don't know even what would come next, and it all turns out fine.
Bree?
I think I'm in the same boat. I can't remember exactly when I first saw it, but it was definitely VHS, definitely in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just the same. The looking back into the 50s and the idea of this is what happened, and of course it probably didn't get all the ideas and what they were trying to provide for the audience. Didn't understand that, I guarantee that, but just to look back into the cars and the clothes, and I guess looking at it as a girl in the early 90s, and like, oh, my brother likes this, like, I like this too, and it's, they have different clothes on.
Just like my Barbies.
I did not see this in theater. I think I saw this on a pirated VHS. And
pirated.
Back when pirating was just fun. That's right.
We got it from Somalians. Did you just watch Captain Phillips?
I did. Okay. Screeners. Yep.
And I remember seeing an interview with Robert Zemeckis, and this film was directed specifically at two audiences. Although, I mean, they wanted it to be more than that. Kids of the 80s, and then parents of kids of the 50s who were now parents in the 80s. And I'm kind of in your boat, Stephen. Like, I didn't really have interest in 50s culture. I didn't really have interest in 80s culture. So a lot of those references kind of just flew over my head, or I just didn't care. And even the idea of going back in time and meeting your parents sounds interesting to me, but that was never the fascinating part of the movie. Like, I thought it was cool that there was time travel. Mm-hmm. I thought the DeLorean was awesome. Yeah. What a great idea for a time machine. And I really liked the performances of Christopher Lloyd,
yes.
Michael J. Fox, and Biff Tannen. Like, yeah, I feel everyone... did anyone have... Like, I knew a Biff Tannen in high school.
Oh, yeah.
I knew a Biff Tannen. Did you guys know a Biff Tannen?
No.
I think every kid can relate to that in some way.
Oh, yeah.
A brother, or, you know, yeah, like a sibling, or a bully at school, and, or see someone who is bullying, or be the bully themselves. Like, everybody can relate to that somehow.
Okay.
Yes. Well, in the case if you identify with the bully, this movie was a grand injustice.
I know. Where was my car at the end, man?
Yeah,
damn it, come on.
I'm still trying to get the girl.
That's right. Yeah, double wax it now? Seriously? Ah, oh, Christ.
Well, let's
finally builds his empire and it gets torn down by a kid and a scientist.
I would have got away with it too.
You crazy-eyed scientist. Let's talk about the characters real quick.
Yeah.
Or for quite a long time.
About 15 minutes.
Marty McFly, played by Michael J. Fox, who was their first choice but was unavailable due to Family Ties, I think is the show that Fox was working on.
Yeah.
Eric Stoltz was cast. And for anyone who has the Blu-ray version of these films, I think you can see production photos or test footage of Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly with Doc Brown.
Help others who don't know who Eric Stoltz is.
I don't know who Eric Stoltz is. Okay. I know he's done things.
All right.
Do you have any info?
That's why I asked the question. I'm
he
like,
did.
Who?
He did Caprica.
Oh.
And
recently,
he was in
Pulp Fiction. He's the drug dealer.
Is he in Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. I mean, he's done stuff.
Like,
he wasn't just
teen actor guy.
No. And this has to be really hard for an actor, but the producers, Robert Zemeckis, and then even he all felt he was inappropriate for the role, which has to be like rough for an actor to have like the temerity to be like, I shouldn't be in this film.
Wow.
And so he stepped down.
That's
I don't know
huge.
If he stepped down or how he was let go, but he also felt he was not appropriate for it.
Yeah.
At the time, then, Fox's schedule was opened up, so they were able to cast Michael J. Fox.
Because didn't they actually shoot
with him for a while?
Yeah, they did.
Like, it wasn't just like...
Yeah, they shot some of the film. I don't know how much they shot with Eric Stoltz, but, I mean, they did start shooting. And, I mean, to have to replace your lead on a film can kill it.
Yeah.
So,
well,
but bravo.
In this case, it did not. So.
Did not. I would like to point out that Ralph Macchio was also approached to do the film, but he turned it down. That would have been a very different film.
I think so.
Wait, so when do I do the karate? I don't. I'm out.
That's right.
I really like Michael J. Fox. I think this is one of his... I mean, he's a really good actor, Spin City and all that.
In general.
And of course...
I think what's great about Michael J. Fox is he has an eternal youth about him, I feel. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's a likable character, you know, and you can look at him not just because he's rather short, but I mean, honestly, he has this kind of youth about him, you know, his look, his general features, he just looks like a kid, you know?
Marty McFly, like, the character occupies this interesting space because he is, I mean, he was a handsome guy. Mm. He wasn't like, I wouldn't argue he's gorgeous.
No.
And he's kind of got confidence, but he also is wavering in the way his dad did. So I felt that was like really relatable for nerds, but he also wasn't nerdy. Like he was, but he was like a music nerd, which is a different type of nerd. So,
well, he was different than his father in how, you know, there was the whole, don't call him a coward, don't call him a chicken. Cause that,
well, that comes up in the second two films. That's not in the first film at all.
My big beef with the second two.
That's not true.
No,
that's not true. That was in the first one, especially at the dance.
Yeah.
No, they don't say, and I've watched this a few times. Yeah, it doesn't, the whole nobody calls me a chicken doesn't start until two.
Really?
And that's actually one of my big beefs because I think it's not as strong of a plot point because it feels like it's really contrived in order to get him into trouble. Like, he's almost out of it, but then they say the wrong word, and so he comes back.
Well,
whereas the first one, it's just all motivated by, I gotta get them together.
He's not a flawed character other than...
Yeah. He has confidence issues, like at the Battle of the Bands.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
He, you know, he's, like, kind of... His band doesn't get chosen, and he's kind of... You know, like, maybe I should not do this. And Jennifer's like, you should do this. But the moment he goes back in time, it's all about, like, I gotta get back. Mm-hmm. I gotta get back to the future.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also, like, he finds with his father, they do go into how his father is super not confident.
Right.
And so he sees that in him, and I think that's when he's just like, okay, I can't just sit on my laurels. I've gotta get out there. I've gotta,
Right.
It's more subtle than, like, blatantly calling him chicken.
Right.
Yeah, by teaching his father to, you know, fight his demons of being called a chicken, he kind of does it for himself.
Yeah.
That's the eternal theme.
Anything else you guys want to say about Marty McFly?
I appreciated the ways that the movies use him to make fun of 80s teenagers.
Hmm.
Yes, yes.
I mean, the one that particularly springs to mind is when he's in the diner and some guy's like, did you just jump off a ship?
He's wearing the best.
Just all the ways that, like, people in all eras of the past and future look at him like he's an idiot because he's so tied to, like, 80s pop culture and fashion and slang and
Michael Jackson and everything.
Yeah,
the headphones.
I liked what Back to the Future 2 did with that. Instead of making fun of it, they made fun of it indirectly by taking 80s culture to the extreme. And everything was just to the ninth degree, to the nth degree of just like, what if 80s continued?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what would happen.
Right.
Well, and I wonder though, like, was that like an intellectual decision on the part of the filmmakers, or are they just like, what do kids in the 80s think the future would be like? You know? More neon, more flying stuff, lasers!
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
They
honestly
have no place to go but the 80s, because they don't know the 90s or anything past the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it just has to be 80s on crack.
Yeah.
Well, I mean...
And I just want to point out, too, that it's 2015, which is only 2 years away, and there's a lot of stuff they have to cover before that happens.
Right.
So get with the program, technology. Come on, scientists.
They said it way too soon.
Yeah.
They were like 20 years is
at least at a
long
3.
Time, right?
You know, like a 3015. But then the 80s wouldn't match up with the characters.
Although they had Google Glass... I noticed in
I read an article, Back to the Future 2. I mean, they did predict some technology that has occurred. Gaming devices are now partially handheld with like Kinect and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Google Glass was another one. There was a third one that I read that was like, oh yeah, that is
well, like
now.
FaceTime
on little dehydrated pizzas or whatever they are.
Sure.
Pizza Hut, by the way.
But we all want the hoverboard. Come on. That's we're all really waiting for.
Yeah. I want the pit bull, man. That thing with the thrusters on the back. The, you know, Biff had.
Yeah. Yeah. It has power.
Hey, that guy took that one line.
I know. He had one line. He had one roll. And he made it.
Nailed it.
Let's bring it back to the first movie. All right. We talked about Marty McFly. Let's talk about Doc Brown. The fact that John Lithgow was their first choice.
That would not work at all.
You don't think he could
do
it?
Well,
it'd be very different.
Let's say 20%.
20%, yes. Because of one thing I wanted to touch on too with all the characters is, and just the movie in general, it's very archetypal. Like, everything is so over the top in their acting. Like, Biff is just so, like, in the way he... So
we'll get to Biff.
Yeah, you know? All right. But I mean, like, in general, like, even... You know, how Marty is, the way he dresses, everything he has, his actions, the things he... Like, everything about him is so archetypal teenager, you know, so that we can relate to him as a kid, you know. And even the story itself about bullying, everything, it's so, you know, this is something that happens to kids very generally, you know. So let's just kind of glaze over it and make it very big and over the top.
I'd like to juxtapose that. Take John Lithgow from 30 Rock from the Sun, Third Rock from the Sun, put a Shock White... wig on him.
Alright.
And just have him go. Like, I think that would get at least 50 to 70% of the way there. Because he can do just like over the top nonsense if he wants to.
He can.
Okay.
He can.
Okay.
Christopher Lloyd, you're fired.
Yeah.
I think it was a fine first choice. Yeah. I think Christopher Lloyd is a much better choice.
Yeah, I don't know why John Lithgow he was their first choice. I don't know if he turned it down. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the story behind it, unfortunately. Yeah.
I think Lloyd brings more of almost an innocence to it.
Yeah.
Like, that I don't think Lithgow would have brought... I mean, that's all conjecture. But I think he brings, like, he's... and a few of the scientists that I've actually known can be that way sometimes. Just, like, they are so in this, you know, math and science and all that thing. When it comes to relating to people, they're just kind of like, what do I do?
Which, in general, brings it back to relating to kids. Yeah. So many kids have that curiosity, wide-eyed. Oh, what's this? I don't know about this. And that's what Doc Brown is. He's like, I want to learn about these things. I want to go back in time and see the Wild West. I want to learn about women, the eternal question. You know,
well,
it's like
And his best friend's a kid. I mean, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, he's...
Yeah,
which now might raise
kid.
Eyebrows.
Right,
but at the time, I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
what do you guys... So, yeah, let's talk about Christopher Lloyd. He was known for Taxi. Anybody else know what else he was known for?
Star Trek 3?
That had come out. Never mind.
Wow.
He's the Klingon who Kirk is fighting throughout that whole movie.
Really?
Yeah, he's Kirk.
He's like the general on that ship.
Wow, I gotta see that.
Bring us around and fire on their engines.
Yikes.
Holy crap, I gotta watch Star Trek 3.
Well, I mean, Clue already came out.
Was
right?
Clue out?
Yeah, it was out by then. I mean, it was early 80s for Clue.
Yeah.
And he was a totally different character in that. Like, way different than Taxi, too, so... Yeah,
Who is he in Taxi?
I've
never watched it.
After Kaufman?
I
thought Kaufman was the mechanic.
No, that's right. No, yeah, Kaufman was a mechanic. I think he was a taxi driver.
Oh,
I watched it, but it was a while ago. Yeah, he was just like a normal taxi driver, just kind of really nutty and just like he was high all the time, like spaced out. It was pretty much like Doc Brown, just didn't really say a whole lot.
I think you're right. I think John Lithgow could come in and do a good job. I think it's Chris Lloyd and specifically Michael J. Fox. Like, their chemistry is great. And there's no telling what John Lithgow would have done, but it's the chemistry of Lloyd and Fox that I really think propels these movies.
I think, as I said before, and as we just, you know, mentioned, like, it's the youthfulness that they both have that makes them mesh so well together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd have that youthfulness, the curiosity, the rebel a little bit, just together. Little two points of what a kid is. You know,
jumping into situations without really thinking through the consequences sometimes. Like, I have a time machine. All right, let's go back in time.
Yeah. Let's go.
Ironically, he's a scientist.
Oops.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But no,
yeah.
Anything else you guys want to say about Doc Brown specifically?
I think I think he's my favorite character.
Oh.
As of 12 hours ago. When I was rewatching all of these, in every movie, other than the third movie, but even in the third movie, there was just a glimpse of it. He doesn't believe it for a hot second. You're from the future? Absolutely not. Like, and he kind of says, get away from me. I don't believe this. I don't believe this. Okay, I believe this. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. I believe you full force. And I think it's just lovely. Mm-hmm. Like,
he's completely committed to whatever's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
And like in the love story in 3.
He's
like, he never even really, and I have the sense that he's never really been interested in relationships and all that kind of thing, but that when it happens, and he's like, he's completely powerless to it, and he's in it.
And he always talks about, I don't want to know what happens in the future, I don't want to know anything, but he always goes back, and he tapes the letter together, and he wears a bulletproof vest, and he always is like, no.
Because he has that curiosity. That's his main trait, is he's curious.
Totally. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Why he builds a time machine.
Yeah, him and Michael J. Fox and Biff Tannen and Thomas F. Wilson specifically. I don't know who said it, but somebody said that like the acting is very much over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, it's over the top probably even for theater. Like, it is huge, especially especially once we get to Biff Tannen and the other Tannens. Like, it is so big for film, but it works. And I really like it. And I would love to be this over the top in a film.
Mm-hmm.
But films are not done that way. Right. Films were not really done that way then.
It's because
Done that way. It's just a very narrow category of like comedic film.
Right. True.
Sort of acting.
And every part of the movie has to commit to that over the topness. Like, why there is so much 80s elements, why everything's neon, like everything's over the top so that it all makes sense why the actors are being, you know, ridiculous.
Nobody looks out of place.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Which brings us to our antagonist, Biff Tannen. Later on, Griff Tannen. Later on, Buford Mad Dog Tannen.
My favorite.
Oh, yes. Thomas F. Wilson, who is supposedly a very, very nice gentleman in real life, plays a great bully.
Supposedly. Yeah, he does.
Supposedly.
Supposedly.
Plays a really good bully who, in the first film, he's just a bully. In the second film, he's a murdering son of a bitch.
Yeah.
He has, like, almost become a rapist.
Yeah.
And then...
I don't know if almost is.
In the first film, he did that, too.
Definitely.
He almost rapes, you know, Marty's
mom. Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. That's true. That scene in the... He's gonna rape her. He's gonna
totally
rape her.
Gonna take it.
It works because, like, all of a sudden, he has power and no consequences. So, yeah. I can see him going
that,
you know.
Ramps up super fast.
Like, okay.
Man, that movie gets dark really quick.
People just have shotguns regularly.
You know, actually, now that you think about it, like back as a kid, like that scene really scared me a little bit. Like, it was really intense, you know, for a little kid to see like this guy really just being very forceful to this woman. It was pretty scary.
It's
for kids.
It's very well done, and I mean the payoff of Crispin Glover punching him. I mean that makes that.
Love that.
Yeah, makes it super justified.
Hey, you. Get your damn hands off her.
I feel like Marty McFly and George McFly are two very type of nerds, and if you don't identify with one, you will most likely identify with maybe the other. I felt I identified more with George McFly.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be a science fiction writer or whatever.
Because none of us are cool enough to like wear padded vests and be
in rock bands. No, I'm not that cool. But yeah, let's bring it back to Biff Tannen. What do you guys want to say about Biff Tannen?
God, I love Biff.
He's great.
Yeah, he plays these three characters, which are basically the same person, but he brings a different life to each one, and I really like the way he does, like, Biff, and then future Biff.
Griff.
Like, he plays this weird, almost robotic, malfunctioning robot.
Yeah.
And he plays it really, it's huge and over the top, but it's really
the second one, he
old
plays
man Biff.
All three
at
the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same.
And right next to each other sometimes.
Yeah.
It's
right.
like acting to himself, which is technically acting to nothing if you think about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is
but he
pretty
does
awesome.
It.
He does really well.
And then his gunslinger.
The third one. Which is the best.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines ever. Let these sissies have their party.
Yeah.
There's so much emotion behind it, and he's like, he's throwing, he's pouting, he's about to cry, he's so angry. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
Just so you guys know, Sean and I have this game we like to play. It's how many tannin lines of dialogue can you insert into a conversation and make them as over the top as you can. It's really fun, especially when you're drunk. So try it sometime.
Nice.
You know, what's interesting is, like, in the first film, he is the antagonist, but he's not really the main obstacle. Like, the main obstacle is, oh, I screwed up my parents not meeting. Now I'm slowly phasing out of existence, which is strange. You think it immediately happened, but whatever.
Yeah, well...
We'll come back to that.
Make this a science discussion, which I'm sure we will at some point.
Kids don't know about science.
You have to start disbelieving on that.
Anything else about any of the other actors? Leah Thompson.
Something else I want to say about Biff is he's a bad guy, but he's also got that likability. Again, coming back to the being so over the top, it doesn't make it so scary for kids. Where he's like, you know, like he's still kind of like, all right, he's kind of a buffoon, and his idioms that make no sense, you know, it's kind of like you can laugh at him, and that's done purposefully so that he has that likability and like, all right, he's kind of an idiot, you know. And even in the last movie, that's what Michael J. Fox says, or sorry, Marty says. It's like, he's an asshole, you know. I don't care what he says about me, and that's something that I think kids can relate to. Mm-hmm. So. I like that about Biff. It's, you know, even though he is a jerk, he is somebody that you can kind of laugh at.
Yeah, and in the first one, he's not like, you don't get that evil sense. Like, he has this little thing with these kids that give us back our ball. They're not, like, afraid he's going to kill them, but he's not going to give back their ball. He's just a jerk.
Yeah, I mean, except when he almost rapes.
Well,
then it crosses that line. It was the 50s.
And when you see, like, there's a scene where, in the second one, where older Biff meets young Biff, you know, and they kind of face off, and you can see where the young Biff is still kind of like innocent and just kind of playful bully, where the older Biff is like, you're going to do this, you're going to make lots of money, you're going to hurt people, and that's kind of the beginning of the evil side for Biff right there. Right. So,
well, before we jump to the second one, Pete, how are you doing over there?
Oh, no, I'm good. Like, it's really when you look at the whole thing as a trilogy, that I'll really start like gritting my teeth.
All right. Well, let's jump to
scolding about it.
Can I say one more thing about the first one?
What's up?
This time watching it, the first one, the thing that I love about it, as opposed to the others, there's so much of it is just a love story. Mm. Like, so much of it is just about getting these two people together. Mm-hmm. These two people that were separated by, you know, whatever circumstances.
Time.
They just, if we can just get them to look at each other right, everything will be, like, they're destined to be together.
Right.
And I thought that was cute and something I really liked about it that I think kind of gets lost in the adventure of the other two. That's just, and that's why the first one just feels like a more important story as opposed to just a crazy action time jumping.
Yeah. And stop your mom from macking on you, because that's weird.
Yeah.
real quick, yes or no, who thinks the first one is the best one?
I don't know.
Yeah, nobody can see your hands raised, guys.
Oh, it's the podcast. Yeah.
Steven,
first
Sean.
First one.
Just Jeremy. My hand
you said. When you say best, that's a tough question for me. I think it's the best one, but I like the third one the most.
Yeah, well, it's Cowboys. Playing to the lowest common denominator.
Okay.
Uh-oh. This is explanation time.
Did you just become the second outcast?
Oh! So you sit on that couch, and that's what happens. The two of you just band together.
I like the first one the best, because I think it has the most going for it. Mm. It's a full movie, and it could have stopped there very easily.
It was supposed to.
Yeah.
and that's great. I won't talk about the second one, but I think the third one, I love the third one, because it's just about cowboys and the Old West and the how nobody really knows what went on, and it's just kind of like a fantasy for everybody.
And a love story again.
Yeah, again, and it's a great cast. Right. They really stepped up the cast in that one, and it didn't have to do, I think I liked it more than two, because it had nothing to do really with one and two.
It was its own separate.
Because the characters, other than Marty and Doc, and Buford, those were a part of the other two, and then everybody else was kind of...
Yeah.
There isn't, like, the town history and, like, trying to recreate all those sets and all that.
All right. Well, we'll get to the third one.
Before moving on, though, we should talk about Crispin Glover's character. I think a little, just a little bit.
Sure.
I want to say one thing. I mean, just mainly, I love what he did for that character in the first one, specifically.
It's a real shame he couldn't negotiate those contracts.
God, he was so...
He was really good. Yeah. And I think the rumor mill is he demanded more pay than Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd, which is an issue.
To continue doing... Into the second and third one?
Yeah, and they wouldn't, the network, or not the network, the studio wouldn't do it.
Hmm.
And then they killed him off.
Whoop.
That's why he's dead in the second movie.
It kind of made a good plot point, though.
Yeah, it makes a great plot point.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's why he didn't return.
Well, I mean, his physicality as, you know, as Marty's father in high school, it was a thing that was very... it was over the top again, like all the other characters were, but it was still very, very real, you know, like little things he did. Like I was just rewatching it and just watching him, like his little hand gestures and the way he looks around, just everything. It's so nerdy. And you know, you see that kid in the cafeteria when you're young, like who sits in the corner, doesn't sit with anybody else, who's kind of writing down his book, writing stories. That was Crispin Glover. Like he totally encapsulated that character so well. I just have to give props for that.
Yeah, and the bigness, I think, works for kids. Because, I mean, even though these were adults playing, you know, high schoolers, it's still, like, high schoolers are so dramatic and so over the top all the time and hormonal. And it's, and I think it fits in with the end of the first one where, like, oh, you hit the bully. Do you want to be class president? Now we all love you.
It goes from zero to a million,
and you know,
hit the bully. It really is like people coming up to him. You want to be in the newspaper,
George? Yeah, it's just so dramatic.
You're up for president.
Something that just occurred to me. Regardless of how like the contractual negotiations worked out with Crispin Glover, I don't find confident George nearly as interesting as nervous 1955's George. So I don't know what they would have done with him even if he had been in the films.
Oh, yeah. His story was done.
His story was done.
His love story was ended.
Look at Leah's character in the second one, right? Am I saying her name right? Is it Leah? Leah or Leigh?
The girlfriend?
Leah.
His mom. His mom. Like, she was just a background character.
She was
in that kitchen scene. She was just there, kind of mumbling and walking and being old. That was it. Like, you didn't really need it.
I thought I heard rumors that, like, some early script ideas were that Marty and George go on time-traveling adventures, and then they go to, like, Marty and Doc go to, like, the 70s and see their parents in college. I don't think those would have... Well, it would have been the 60s. I think what they ultimately did, which is... These are the really negative consequences of time travel. Probably the appropriate choice.
Yeah.
Which brings us to Back to the Future 2.
The fun one.
Probably the least favorite of the trilogy for most people.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say the one really cool thing about Back to the Future 2. I think it's really neat to see the first movie again from a different perspective. Now, the big problem with this is if you are marathoning these movies, it doesn't work as well. But you have to remember, there had been 5 years between Back to the Future and Back to the Future 2. And of course, there was no intention to make sequels. But then the studio threw a lot of money at everybody. And I think,
at the end of the day, nobody had, like, you know, utilities on their computer where they could download both movies and watch scenes at the same time.
Yeah, and credit to Robert Zemeckis. I mean, he must have watched that first movie over and over again, because there's a lot of good details in Back to the Future 2 that he doesn't skimp over, as far as like where people should be, where objects should be, camera perspectives. You know, he recreates the first film from different perspectives very, very well. And I believe this was the first time two films were shot back to back, because Back to the Future 2 and 3 were both shot at the same time. And while they were shooting 3, he was editing 2. I can't think of another trilogy up until this point that had done it. I know Lord of the Rings does it later on.
Oh, yeah.
And Matrix sequels did that.
But this might have been
badly
first.
Yeah, we won't talk about Matrix. But obviously Star Wars did not.
Yeah.
Godfather did not.
Yeah.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that.
I think this was the very
first
time.
Trilogy did the 2 and 3.
There was only a year between 2 and 3.
Yeah.
He even said it very end. Coming summer 1999.
Yeah, 2 was released in 1989 and 3 was released in 1990.
Great marketing and franchising, wonderful, no questions about it. Mm-hmm.
But to get back to my point, it was really interesting to see the first movie again from a different point of view and to kind of like try and avoid interfering with the events of the first film so as not to screw that up in the time stream or whatever was neat. And of course, getting to see the future, which was like the 80s on crack.
Yep.
Was
but
cool.
All in one town, like localized.
All in Hill Valley.
All in Hill Valley.
So Back to the Future 2. I saw a pirated copy of this also.
Oh.
I did not see this in theater.
Somalis,
the third one was the
up,
only one
they?
I saw in theater.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? What do you guys think about Back to the Future 2?
When I was a kid, this was absolutely hands down my favorite. I saw all three around the same amount of time, and this was hands down my favorite, I would tell everybody. Mm. And as best as I can tell now, because I've gone through waves of which one's my favorite. It was 2, then 1, then 3, then 1, 3,
right.
Something like that. But as a kid, like the best thing was future. I love seeing the future. I love any take on the future, whether or not I agree with it or not. That doesn't matter. It's someone's take on the future, and I want to see it. And that was my favorite part of 2, is seeing hoverboards. What are people doing? Flying cars.
How much cars are.
Yeah.
The weather service.
Yeah.
That was cool. And I love that they go the step further and you get to see the 80s reflection of the future and then the future's reflection on the 80s
with
by going into
80s.
The cafe
yeah.
80s.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I just realized for the first time when I watched it today, he meets Frodo Baggins.
Yes!
Yes.
It's
Elijah
like a young Wood. Elijah
Wood.
Yeah.
Elijah
Wood.
Yeah. He's the kids
he's
that are going,
oh,
yes,
Elijah
your hands,
yeah.
What a baby. I had
yeah.
no idea.
At the
That's
arcade.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
I noticed
but,
that too.
But it was cool that there's so much 80s stuff, like how the future sees the 80s. It was kind of a surreal moment, which I thought was great.
And Billy Zane was one of Biff's guys too, by the way.
What were you about to say? Yeah. You were about to say something.
I just thought it was funny because I never caught it before that if to get your car to get it to fly, it was like $40 million. I just thought it was.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Like right now?
Yeah.
Oh okay.
Inflation in 20 years.
Yeah.
30 years was huge.
It was like
$39.99
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I thought
it was 40,000.
Because I was trying to look at that, and I was like, how many commas are...
Yeah.
I only saw Jaws 19, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
In holographic.
Well, the 80s was full of gas and oil crises, so they were probably thinking, I mean, it was going to run away with inflation. Things were just going to go financially down.
It's also, it also was a comedy, guys.
Yeah!
So, my outcast.
Okay.
You said the first movie was acceptable.
Yeah.
So why does 2 and 3 completely lose it for you?
Because the 2 and 3 are just an hour and 45 minutes of jokes. They don't feel like, you know what would be a really great story, and I think really entertaining to people? They were very like, you know what was popular? That first Back to the Future movie. We better write some more of those.
Yeah.
You know, like the first movie, the story feels natural. If you accidentally time travel to a date that you didn't even intend to go to, you could horribly screw up your own past, and then how would you deal with that? The other ones are like, oh, we're gonna go here on purpose to deliberately try and fix this problem.
But you that's the second one, and there is no accidental time travel.
Right.
There is. This is what happens when I fuck with the time stream, and now these heroes have to go and stop
right,
it.
Right, but I mean, like, that's why they feel more contrived to me, too, is like, they're on purpose. It's like, now we're going to have a movie.
Honestly, as a kid, I felt the 2 was too confusing, you know, because he kept jumping around so much and there was all that, you know.
They go to 3 different
timelines
and one of them is an alternate timeline.
Right, yeah, like the, and that, I never, honestly, I didn't understand that as a kid. Like, I didn't
it
understand time stream stuff.
I felt like that scene where, like, Doc Brown literally draws on the board. I was like, got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Thanks,
yeah.
Doc.
Okay.
That's, I feel like that's also a scene that they added after like some test screening.
Yeah. It's a kid's like,
and it's,
yeah.
And that was, even as a kid, I remember that one, you were talking about the science of it, that one bugging me as far as time travel goes, because
right.
At this point now, it's like, we're not really time traveling, we're just jumping between realities.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. Yep.
So then what you do wouldn't affect your own history, because you're just in a different time period.
Right, so
but that's why they have to go back to
it
a point
breaks
before.
The whole
right, exactly. And that's, but then it kind of negates the the fake right. science of the first
that
movie.
That doesn't...
Oh, yeah. It totally breaks the whole time travel okay. mantra.
Yeah, this is,
yeah.
This is my
movies.
Big issue with these movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that, like, in the first movie, he goes back to the past, he screws up his own existence, and therefore starts gradually fading out until he can fix that. In the second movie, Biff goes back and just gives his younger self some information, and therefore ceases to exist.
Yep.
But in the first movie, Marty still altered his past, but was able to go back to the present that resulted from that alteration.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Biff should have been able to do the same thing. Old Biff should have been able to go back to the future
yeah, totally.
And be like, yeah!
All right.
There is
he should have had the big truck now.
There is a extra features on the DVD, on the DVDs where Robert Zemeckis attempts to answer.
Really?
All of these very questions. Because technically, the second movie shouldn't even be able to exist.
Right.
The moment they go to the future, there would be no Marty to see in the future because he just jumped
right.
30 years.
Yeah. I was thinking about that.
That's one of the...
He jumped out of his own time stream.
So he's going to a future
it would simply require him to have then gone
come back
at some point.
So that is the theory that that Robert Zemeckis subscribed to, is that time will always create... How did he put it?
So he's saying like it splinters off every time.
No,
time
bubbles around.
Not even that. Like all the influences on time, you will always get to the ending point that time is meant to get to, regardless of all the things that you change. Because at the end, this is where you get to. You need to read it.
I could buy it because in the first movie, like Marty was the one who was able to exist. Like he didn't have memories of his childhood in the
right.
newly created timeline. But like the same thing should have been true for Biff.
It should have. And I don't know if he answers that question. He maybe does. Warp speed doesn't bother you. Why do you buy that one?
Because it's a... Like, you can set up any fictional framework that you want to for your movie.
Just don't break those.
If you're going to make it, don't break it.
Okay.
Well, I think... why I didn't think number two worked for me as a kid was because I didn't understand the time stuff. And one and three, they kind of glazed over it. It wasn't important to the themes, you know? It was
true.
A love story in one and three. And that was really what was important. Like, they were one time zone, or one time period, one dimension, whatever you want to call it. And they were focusing on just those characters in that time. Where two was like, we have to go here to do this, with this person, and that, and that. And it was like, there's no real connecting what you're doing for any characters.
One and three, it's like, we went here... Yeah. And we were there for a while, and then we went back to the 80s.
The number two is a time travel movie, whereas one and three are more of a love story and a get home movie.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
a journey
yeah.
movie.
There is that struggle to
is
we need to get home.
Netflix.
Yes, I think it is.
Which is precisely why I loved it as a kid, and I don't so much anymore.
Yeah.
It was like the grand.
You just gotta because everyone's gonna keep shouting. So.
It's a grand time travel adventure.
Okay, I need to retract what I just said because I looked it up, and you're right. It is $40,000, which isn't too bad. I would pay $40,000 to get my car to fly.
How much were cars in the '80s?
Probably
like 10,000 would get you a nice car.
So 40,000 was probably seen as a like in 1985 was like, oh my
just
god, that's
just to get
a lot
your car
money.
To.
Yeah, that's
fly.
Not even the
so
car.
It's just
that's
an upgrade,
not even a car.
So
that's just the
to
turn
the
your car into
a hover conversion.
Skyway flyer
is what Doc Brown calls that.
Yes.
So that means that a car was probably more than that.
Right.
Since an upgrade would probably be less than.
Do you have to get a pilot's license?
Ha ha.
That's actually a really big concern with like privately owned aircraft and like the future of personal transit. Just to be like a real world nerd.
No, go.
Oh yeah,
super like regulating that kind of traffic is nuts.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, you need a special class license to drive a certain types of vehicle, so I would assume you'd have to get a.
But I mean, like aircraft now are super safe because they are maintained like crazy and they are checked before and after every single trip.
So to suddenly have
can you
people
imagine
just,
like
yeah.
the people that you see driving down the street and they're like rusty old pickup flying a plane?
Jesus. Yeah. Well, I don't think we'll have flying cars until they are piloted by robots.
Yes.
You can't trust robots, man.
Well, no, they'll kill us all. But that's what's going to lead to.
First, they'll fly
us home. You Skynet sympathizers.
So,
take me home, Thomas. Oh, I've been stabbed.
The one thing I did like about 2 was it answered a lot of questions that I had about 1. It was like they were looking into my mind and
like what certain characters were doing at certain times? Or
The one big question was who was Doc Brown's dog in the 50s.
Oh, the Copernicus.
Copernicus
was sort of the Stones. Sorry, I don't know where I came from.
They never said it wasn't. It's not a big. Oh, it's Disney not even a big too. Deal. Mm-hmm. But he never. They never called him Copernicus in the first one. And I'm like, is that Einstein?
Is this dog there in the first one?
Yeah,
it is. Okay.
It is
it
the
is.
Same actual dog actor. Honestly.
It's the same Aww. Dog. Sure. And it's like, wait, that doesn't make any sense.
Is that dog 40?
I thought he just got a new dog or something.
It is a new dog because it's Copernicus. Yeah.
They never say.
They never say
in the first one.
They never say.
Then he never says.
Who the dog is? He's just there.
And then I thought he says Copernicus. Go on, Copernicus. And then he. Or is that you might be right. That might be the second one that
second
he says, who's Einstein? He's like, that's what you call your dog in 85. And then Doc gives him why would I do that kind of look? And I was thinking about, it was like, well, when was Einstein really
was already
popular? He was already famous. This was the 50s. And I was like, oh, why did he hate Einstein then, but now likes Einstein? I don't know.
Let's look at all the transgressions of the Tannins in the second film. He was going to take a baseball bat to Marty's head in the middle of just, like, the town square in the future.
Yeah. Well, it was actually in the store, whatever. I mean, yeah.
It's like, yeah.
He grabs Lorraine in the 50s and he's like, one day you're going to be my girl. You're going to be my girl, Lorraine. He kills George, of course. Uh-huh. Buys the police. Biff really just descends into darkness in the second one.
Yeah.
Well, are we talking about Biff or Griff here?
Both. But more Biff.
Biff to Griff.
I mean, it's more Biff.
Yeah. Griff is a cyborg.
Yeah.
I think we need to address this. He's installed robotic enhancements not only... in his accessories, but in himself, right?
Yeah.
And he's probably lost a portion of his humanity due to this.
Right. Yeah.
And he just thinks he can do whatever he wants.
Right. Plus, he has his friend who is an iPod, apparently. The guy that's just like, chicken, okay, I got that.
Yeah. I want that power.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Be that guy in the group. That's fun.
His whole entourage was just great.
Oh, yeah.
This girl with the claws.
Which he has them
no,
in the...
Screw.
He has his entourage in the first film, right? Doesn't mm-hmm. he?
Yeah.
He always
Billy
has
Zane.
His three guys.
As I said.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is one of the things I loved about the second one. It was just the first one plus wacky... like 80s stuff and robotic enhancements and stuff flies. Like it's whatever you saw before plus those things.
Yep.
Right.
And I enjoyed that as a kid.
And a badass hoverboard. So.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you guys want to say about part two? Because we kind of need to move to part three.
I love the
Absolutely.
Cliffhanger of part two. I think it's
oh,
just
yeah.
the whole gets
oh,
hit. I remember
yeah.
as a kid just being like, what? Like, he gets hit by lightning in the sky, and then all of a sudden this guy pulls up with this old letter.
Oh, yeah.
It was
what
really,
is,
yeah.
What is that guy's name? Because he became famous for me after that movie. He'd had, like, 5 lines or something, and it was such a, like...
The Western Union guy?
Yeah. Like, he was forever notable to me as, like, the guy in the end of Back to the Future 2.
He's done a lot of things, and like, little parts like that in
mm-hmm.
other stuff.
I just thought Western Union was really reliable after that movie. I was like,
yeah.
really?
Wow.
Like, they were blind to that letter for, like, 150 years.
No,
yeah.
And never read it.
Yeah.
Never
and
read
I
it.
I love that they're just, like, all... They're excited about it. That's totally how a group of people, you know, that deliver mail would be. You'd be like, this
mail
has been
nerds.
In... You know, what? Oh, let's do it. Let's
you
see
get
what
to
happens.
Deliver it. You get to deliver
yeah.
the letter.
They kind of expect the whole office to be there just to see, like...
Oh. That begs a question I have
the
for a lot of
poppers.
Movies. For brands that are in movies, is it always or just sometimes where companies vie for that role to be that thing? Like, to be Western Union, be the guy, the company that delivers it.
I think it's the only one that would work because it wasn't FedEx back then.
And it would all, Western Union was probably
true.
The only
but
one.
But it could be the United States Postal Service.
Yeah. Well,
it wasn't the Postal Service. It was
are they that reliable, though?
Their
let's be honest.
Was that?
I think they probably called their marketing guy.
And,
they're like,
and
hey,
I wonder.
You know,
I wonder.
For $100,000, we can give you guys a really nice brand placement in our movie.
Because it is.
It is a really nice brand placement.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Like, Western Union's trustworthy.
And Pepsi is all over the place in the future. In there.
Yeah,
like,
that bottle, how does it open? I
want
to drink Pepsi.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but there's a sign like in the future where it says Pepsi Perfect. Like they've reached that level of Pepsi by that point. I was like, really? Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's not happening.
Nope.
Back to the Future Part 3. Because we've been talking for over an hour.
Okay.
We still have to do this final part.
Let's do it.
That's all right. Nothing much happens in three.
I saw this one in theater. It is my favorite of the trilogy. I will stand by that right now. And here's why. We've kind of touched on some of these things. Three really works for me because one is the setting. Since there are no 50s or 80s to like really get caught up in, which I didn't really honestly care about to begin with, I found the Western setting really interesting. The fact that almost everyone's walking around carrying a gun raised the threat level for me immediately, which I thought, you know, I like that. I like the raising of the stakes. I love that Doc Brown is pushed front and center as the romantic interest. Because I don't care about Marty and Jennifer.
Especially Jennifer.
Well, and it's also interesting to see your leading romantic interest be this, like, 55... I don't know how old you were, Christopher Lloyd.
He's just extra old.
He's just extra old. And, like, his scenes with Mary Steenburgen, I thought they really worked well together.
Yeah.
And and that was his first on-screen kiss.
Oh, wow.
And the fact that it's an intellectual romance.
It is. Yeah. I really liked that. I mean, they're like, he's like hitting on her with a telescope. Yeah.
I mean,
that's what we nerds want.
Yeah.
That's how you do it, right?
Right.
That works.
It never works. But
it's kind of intellectual, but they fall in love in 2 seconds.
So
that's
all.
They
dance
each other's genes. Yeah.
It's love at first sight, Sean.
1985, you have to fall in love in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you die.
You got to be done by 30.
I thought it was cool to reverse the problem of the first film, which is the DeLorean can move, it just can't time travel. In the third film, it can time travel, it just can't move. So the whole pushing train sequence, I really liked. I thought that was really cool. The last half hour of that film is like the last half hour of Jedi for me. It's like, oh my gosh, all this is coming together. I hear you laughing over there, my outcast.
What? I'm sorry. Just your whole, like, you're comparing, like, oh, he's on a horse, he's on a train, and they go up, and then the red smoke, and then you're comparing that to, like, Luke fighting Vader in a space battle, and, like, the bunker, the Ewoks.
All right, shut up.
The end of the Republic weighs in the balance, or the love of Doc Brown. It's like, what's more important?
I will say that the first one, I don't know if the first one is necessarily better written. I don't know. I feel three is actually pretty well written. And I'm looking at Sean.
I like three. I really do. Yeah. I like that it's back to the idea of we just got to get home. We just got to get, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought they set up well. It's that, you know, I'm happy here. Don't come back for me. But then they throw in but I'm going to die in 2 days. You got to go back for him. And that's, I think all that's great. But again, it goes to that idea of don't call me chicken. Like,
let's talk about that. That's obviously a plot device they created because suddenly they had to make a trilogy and have the character grow in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which Doc Brown doesn't have anything.
He grows
in terms of he finds
he
love.
Does.
Yeah.
He finds
it's
love.
Like
he
Back
balances
to the Future,
himself.
Dumbledore Gandalf. You know,
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But then your Obi-Wan falls in love, which is
great.
Great
but
to
then
see.
He turns into a shimmering hologram or something and lives on his time traveling train. But
that's
sorry.
The ending is a little weird. That's fine.
Yeah.
The movie ends after he gets back. That's where it ends.
It does.
What were you saying, Sean? I'm sorry. I'm lost in the hologram.
Oh yeah, it just that. I feel that that's just not as strong a choice of, you know, if you say the magic word, then we'll get into a fight. And so that's what I kind of have trouble with. That, like, all, you know, they already had the idea of he wants to kill Doc, so we got to get out. And it just gets kind of muddled with the showdown. And I mean, it's a Western, so you got to have a showdown. But it just doesn't feel quite as strong in how they get there. And, but, like, the train sequence is great and all, you know, and the fact that he created a refrigerator to make one cube of ice is delightful and, you know, and it's a good movie.
It's a very
dirty
cube of ice, I might add.
Yeah. And the way he makes eggs in the morning, ingenious.
Yeah. I don't really mind
thing.
I don't really mind the chicken calling out device because I take it as a reflection on what it is to be a man.
Hmm.
And it's an issue of masculinity. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's, are you a man because you step up to fight? Are you a man because you want to make things right? These are all themes throughout the whole all of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But the second and third really hit on this. Are you a man when it comes to fighting.
Right.
Or well, is fighting manly, or is stepping down
from
fighting
the chicken,
manly?
The chicken thing, I will argue, I think works better in 3, because in the West, especially when like he walks into the cantina,
can't get away.
Wants to be Star Wars. When he sees those 4 actors there, who were supposedly really famous Western actors, I didn't watch Western.
Really?
Those 4 guys who were like, everybody, everywhere.
That guy, he was the bullet in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
He was.
Like the
voice.
The idea of being a coward
in
the
Five Goes West, actually, too.
The
dog.
The idea of being a coward in the West is far more harsh than being a coward in 1985.
Yeah.
Or even 1955.
Well, they changed the word.
But I see what you mean as far as like...
And I totally agree that there is that theme of what, you know, what is it to be a man? But I think they just do it so much better in 1 because it's about him, you know, stepping up, and the way Crispin Glover plays that moment of, like, you see him just get terrified because he realizes it's Biff and not Marty, and he goes, you know, but then you see him make that choice of, I've got to stop it. No matter what happens, I have to stop this moment. And that's what being strong is, not fighting, and that's what I love about it.
But Marty doesn't want to fight Biff. He walks out there and he puts his gun down, so he chooses not to eat.
Yeah, I think that is in there, and I think it's good. I just think it's a little stronger in the first one. That's all.
That's fine.
I'm going to edit that out, and I'm going to make it sound like you love the third one. Back to the Future 3. I kind of hijacked the conversation. What do you guys want to say?
Well, you said a lot of it already, but I think one thing I liked about it too, which you mentioned, was the fact that Biff was a lot scarier in this because, as you said, he had a gun the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, he was more of a murderer. Like it was established when they went into this world that he killed people. He was going to kill Doc Brown. Like he was a killer. So to have that as your villain in the movie, it's pretty scary. You know, and even the way that he played it as an actor, like he was very serious. It wasn't as over the top as the other Biffs were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was still pretty archetypal. And some of the things he did, like especially after he shot Marty, was all like, yeah, like doing a little weird dance. I don't know where that came from, but for the most part, he was very, you know, like straightforward.
He breathed out of his mouth a lot too.
Yeah. Well, he had that freaking beard over his face. He couldn't even move his mouth. But the one line where the hilarious where he's like, I'm gonna kill you on Monday. He's like, no, we're gonna take over Stagecoach on Monday. Well, we got Tuesday. We can do Tuesday. All right, Tuesday, I'm gonna kill you. You know. So yeah, I liked it.
Bree, Jeremy, you guys look like you have some thoughts.
You can really tell the last two were filmed very close together because they're more connected than the first one. There's a lot of things that happen in the second one that reflect on the third one, especially with the shooting game and the 80s cafe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It goes right to... big plot point in
foreshadowing.
The foreshadowing in the third one, and they do that a lot between the two movies. This is where I become an outcast. It doesn't make sense, and this goes back to the whole time travel and the whole changing things and everything changes. It doesn't make sense that Doc Brown in the 50s. He can't wait to get to the 1885, but at this point, Doc Brown's already dead, and it just doesn't make sense. Like, I can't figure out the whole time lapse.
Does that make sense? I can fix that for you.
Okay.
So this version of time travel...
Yes.
It holds up in the original sense of the first movie. So Doc Brown from 1985... travels back into 1885. He doesn't replace anybody. He's not dead by anybody.
He's just
that person back in time.
Oh.
And
he was
dies.
Born in 1900 or something.
Right. So he
gets old, travels back, and dies in the past.
No one from that timeline is dying and disappearing. He's just a guy who went back and died. So they're preventing him from dying. Preventing him from not coming back.
At that point in time.
That's fine. That's from a time travel science standpoint. That one's fine.
You really need
that
to look at these
okay.
special features.
I'm also surprised though that like nobody in that intervening century like ran across his grave, you know, and thought like, hey, isn't this that guy who lives over on what's his name?
He mentions his family name is different. when they move to the U.S., yeah. But I don't remember when he says they change it, because they were the Von Brauns rather than the Browns. But
if you go to a graveyard, I'm sure you'll run into several Browns. In the museum,
and Doc Brown.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He just
got buried.
I love 3. It's my favorite. I think it's, I say the first one is the best film. I think it's the best self-contained film, but I enjoy the third one the most because it has the most ample opportunity to do callbacks. So it's just chocked full of what you would call jokes.
Yeah.
And
it's the Star Trek 4 of Back to the Future.
Right. So for me, every time they're like, oh yeah, you know that thing that happened in the other movies, well, here's the Western version of that. I just go, yay, I love that. I want another one. Let's do another one. And you don't have any of the hang-ups of technology being the savior or what is the town... what did the town do before, because this is the start of the town. So it's just a playground of Western callbacks from the first two movies, and I love it.
Yeah. I think that's why I like all three, because it's just full of callbacks.
Yeah.
He goes to
callbacks.
The cafe in the first one, then he goes to the
saloon.
80s cafe in the second one,
and
then
he goes to the saloon
in the third
one.
And he always goes and he asks for something ridiculous.
There's always
like
a chase.
Pepsi Free, or he asked for water,
and he's always being made fun of his clothes.
Yeah.
Wearing those Nikes every time.
Yeah. He always wakes up and his mom's talking to him, and he's like, "What day is it?" Oh,
yep.
Good old
some version of his mom.
Yeah.
Every movie has one of those.
Yeah.
McFly Farm.
It's great.
McFly Farm. So that kind of brings us to.
It's cool. It's just.
What do you want to say, Outcast?
No, I'm just reminiscing on costumes.
Okay.
Stupid round hat.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, that he wears?
Yeah.
It's good for his face. I think it puts his face well.
Was that not appropriate for the timeline?
No, it was totally fine.
It is
a
stupid hat.
Just the fact that you can get like a real cowboy
hat. Sure, yeah.
It is a real car. Anyway,
I think my favorite line in this movie, yours is the sissies
have
their party. I think mine is everybody everywhere will know that Clint Eastwood is the biggest yellow belly in the West. And that line totally skimmed over my head as a kid, now I think that's really brilliant.
Anyway, my favorite is Better Run, Squirrel.
Oh,
it's very glazed over.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Before
creepy.
They go murder him.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait, what? Yeah, anyway.
So the Back to the Future trilogy. I have two questions that I want to take us out. First off, Pete, we haven't changed your mind, have we?
Not at all.
You know,
it's almost changed ours, it sounds like.
I do feel like I have to go back and rewatch 2 and 3.
You won't like 2.
Well.
But 3 I think deserves
a
second
pass. Anything that confirms my opinion will make me happy.
Jeez. You'll be calling us individually.
Wow.
So I'm watching this scene and it's garbage.
Remember that line that
we liked? I hated it.
I mean, I think the first one is, it's like a decent exercise in like filmmaking, and I think it's a good family movie in that category. I think the others just, they get silly and they're kids movies.
Just to hop on the consequences of sticking within like the rules that you set up for your universe and whatnot, is there a time travel movie that you can point to that you really like? Because I feel time travel is very hard to do.
The one that I like that I think works and sticks with its own rules is 12 Monkeys.
Ooh, 12 Monkeys.
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
I hated Looper.
Okay.
Really?
There
I
are
understand that.
Serious flaws in that.
I just rewatched it, and I mean, I really like the movie, but there are some.
I was watching that movie, and I was like, no, that can't work because of these 6 other things they already explained.
Mm-hmm. What about Star Trek 4?
Star Trek 4. is actually fine.
Okay.
I don't have any issues with their time travel because they specifically state, like, we are going out of our way to only affect things that will not have a substantial effect on the world.
Have you seen Primer?
Yes.
Okay, because that's the
one...
That
is a funky movie.
That's a time travel movie that takes it to
a
whole
like
other
weird,
level of,
bleak,
like...
grim...
Yeah, but... but really takes a lot of time to make sure that they understand their world of time travel and get it consistent.
Right, like, what exactly are the rules?
This is what is going to happen for time travel.
Yes,
well, it's the most. It's the most realistic time travel movie I've ever seen.
Yes. When did it come out?
The
2 or 3 years ago? Maybe a little more than that?
No,
it's
very
old.
It's way older than that, yeah. It's what? Like...
Was this the one with
2000s.
The two guys and make a box?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that was pretty...
Yep.
And you can travel.
Oh,
yeah,
I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
I watched it the first time. I was like,
oh, you have
I gotta
watch
it
at least
2 more times to
really
get...
times, read the wiki on it to understand how their time travel works.
Yeah, I remember that. And they made copies of themselves? Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Well... Yeah, it's the time traveled versions back replacing people, so there's going to be dual versions.
I don't, make sure I don't think any time travel will beat Futurama's episode where Fry becomes his own grandfather.
Yes!
That's what it is.
And the fact that they just accept it. And like,
yep.
That is the universe that always existed. He always was his own grandfather.
And the professor accepts it, but he accepts it with just such hatred.
And when way later on, they even have a thing talking. Fry talks about a paradox or something. He's like, oh, this coming from his own grandfather.
Yeah.
All right.
To bring it back to... we have a great Futurama podcast. Go listen.
Yeah.
To bring it back to Back to the Future, I have two questions that I want to take us out with. Question number one. Do these movies hold up? Can you sit someone down now who was not born in the 50s or 80s or who lived through those time periods and can they enjoy these?
Ooh. You say movies or like individually do they work?
You can rank them.
You can say if
yes,
you feel that
others.
One does and the others don't, that's fine.
I'm going to say 2 doesn't because there's so much 80s in there and we're so beyond that now, you know. But 1 and 3 definitely are timeless. Like the love stories, all the elements are very timeless elements. So,
okay. John?
Yeah, I think and I would even the first one I think would hold up, but it's hard because it's so much like even today, it's so much of it my own kid that comes in or my own self child and comes out when I see that's what, you know, really speaks to me, and so that's hard, but I'd love to like show it to my nephew and see what if he
watch it without
I really
it.
Can't
really interesting.
Like a science experiment with a little notepad
like
there
it.
Are you liking that part? Does it make
sense? Because he loves like the original Star Wars trilogy. There are stuff, you know, that obviously do hold up, but I don't know if he would like that or not.
Yeah.
Jim?
Well, I think if you get him with one, you'll get him for
you
the trilogy. Like I think 2 is the weakest point in it because it's so 80s centric, but it's still, if you understand if you enjoy the first one, then you'll be like, well, this is just the extension of that universe, so it'll make sense to them. I don't know if it won't be familiar at all, but it'll probably make sense and be enjoyable to some part.
Oh, I would never sit somebody down and watch 2.
Ever.
No, not by itself for sure.
Yeah,
because they would just be so confused.
You'd
and
have to do the first one.
You'd either have to do 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, and even that. But I think 1 and 2 or 1 and 3 are classic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not necessarily 80s movies, but just time travel and the mystery of what is going to happen in the future. And that's what 2 has going for it, because it's their take on the future, and it's fun. But I think it's just, I would definitely want to show these off to future generations, and it would be interesting to see their take on it. But
I feel I think you all bring up very good points, except for you, Sean. I feel as an audience member, like whenever you sit down to watch a movie about time travel, you have to take into account when that movie was made or when that story was written. At least, I mean, I think you should. You don't have to.
Just
but
suggesting.
It's probably wise.
Dude,
you stupid people to do that. This is probably a good idea. I mean, like, Star Trek really has some interesting ideas of where the future was going. I mean, Alien is supposed to be in the future, and their computers are running on... God, what are their computers running on?
Diesel?
1975.
Diesel. Yeah, I don't even
know. You know, like...
Oh, right. They're
so grimy.
Yeah, so...
Yeah,
Dossie.
Yeah, like MS-DOS.
But honestly, any computer you ever see... I mean, you see people on TV in contemporary shows, and they'll, like, pull out their smartphone and have, like, giant text on it so the camera can see it. Mm-hmm. It's like, why are you doing that?
Just... And everything other than, like, the all the flying things could happen. Like, everything wasn't so far out in the future. Like, the food and the glasses and the door and lights on and the lights come on.
True.
Mm-hmm. All that is pretty doable, other than the hoverboard thing.
Yeah. That's all I ask. Is that so hard? Just some hoverboards, people. Come on.
It's gonna be a while.
So, my second question, and my final question.
Wait, does he think he's gonna hold up?
He's the outcast, so we don't care about him.
Oh, you know.
My final question, with the Total Recall remake, RoboCop remake, God. A Naked Gun remake, all of these
There's
things. There is a Naked Gun remake coming.
Yeah.
It's with Ed Helms.
Why?
With all these remakes, can you do a remake of Back to the Future? And
Ooh.
Should you?
You know what would be awesome?
Boo?
You get Michael J. Fox now.
Oh.
No. To go, like, and get him and Christopher Lloyd and, like, have them now as their, like,
the
2014 versions of them travel back to the 80s and show all of the stuff that they were doing behind the scenes to keep themselves safe in the other three movies.
Oh, that's
funny.
That'd be a great extra track.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, kids would be bored by it.
Yeah.
It would be a huge seller among, like, the 30 to 50 crowd.
Yeah, right.
I think the a Back to the Future remake suffers from the same thing that I hate about Ghostbusters 3. It's just going to be, like, the younger, sexy version of it, I'm sure. They're going to cast somebody, some young person in the Marty McFly role,
right.
And
I feel like Michael J. Fox was the young, sexy version.
I know,
already.
But everything is over-the-top sensationalized now. In terms of what
okay.
it is to be young and sexy, it's
right, like buffer and
right.
chiseled jaw.
Yeah,
well,
I wouldn't want to see it.
I don't think that Back to the Future is a very special effects heavy movie, anyways. So,
mm-hmm.
like Total Recall, sure, because now you can
go through the planet.
Yeah, the planet, and there's all sorts of special effects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good or bad, that's
yeah.
you know better special effects, but
it's very
like,
pretty.
I'm sure you can make the hover car look a little cooler, but it really doesn't. I mean, I don't feel like it changes the story any year.
We know too much. We know what 2015
yeah.
more
right.
than likely
more
look
likely.
Like.
Yeah.
I think record. They could do another time travel movie that does a lot of the moves that Back to the Future does.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like
but don't
inner,
make Back to the Future.
Yeah, don't remake it.
Like,
just
I think
make
it would
a,
be like, it would be like Back to the Future again. And somebody
mm-hmm.
would go back to the 80s. When their parents are in high school.
Yeah.
Something I would love to see would be something like Back to the Future 4.
Like Marty's kid.
Right, someone discovering the DeLorean and reigniting time travel.
First off, just discovering a DeLorean. And
the DeLorean.
What's this?
The DeLorean.
The DeLorean.
It was just in a mall parking lot.
You just forgot where
Pine
I parked.
Mall. Yeah.
Been there the whole time.
Or actually one Pine Mall, if you notice.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's
true.
Yeah, it you does change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steven, what's your opinion on this issue?
No, it's what it is. Let it stay. It'll never, like, it just, because, it, yeah, it was iconic for the time period because of all the 80s elements. You know, it worked well then,
mm-hmm.
but what would they use now? You know, would they use 90s? Would they use 2000s? It's... There's nothing really too iconic, I would think, about our era. Honestly, I think about it. Like,
yeah,
Google? What do we have?
Like,
you're
not in high school right now.
What?
Yeah.
Because you're not in high school right
yeah.
now.
Well, I have a high school degree. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
I've been in high school. I've seen the teenagers. I know what they do. I don't know. Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, in general, like, I don't think we, as a populace, like, kids in high school would buy the elements in a movie done that way. Over the top, archetype bullying, all that stuff. I don't think they would buy that nowadays. They like vampire movies. They like totally different types of movies.
Really? Why was Mean Girls so popular? That's just a bully movie.
Okay.
It's still a thing. It's just not... I agree that it doesn't revamp well.
Half the movie would be on Facebook.
Yeah,
that's part
it would
of the
be
problem.
Different. It would be very different.
It
would,
yeah,
I don't know what
different.
It would be.
It would be so different, it wouldn't be the same movie. That's
Agreed.
The thing I'm saying.
Agreed.
Like, it wouldn't be the same movie, so just keep it as it is and do something totally different.
Agreed.
And don't call it Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. With that brings our Back to the Future discussion to a close. Alan Silvestri did the score. It's great. Go listen to it. I totally didn't talk about that.
Oh, man.
Wonderful score.
Great.
That everyone can hum.
Was
there anything we didn't touch on
that
you guys really need?
Yes, we have one thing.
We're running very long, so.
No, I mean, we could all just denounce the train, right? The hover train at the end of the
year.
That's huge. That's so bad. I just always want to ask Mr. Zemeckis why.
Just to bring it to a super happy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the Scooby-Doo ending.
I feel, who was the studio again?
Universal.
Was like, we need to be able to make a TV show and video games, so you'd better not kill him.
We have to know that everybody has a happy ending.
Everybody has.
Nobody just gets old and dies.
Yeah.
Or falls in love and dies, which they could have done too, but we won't go there.
I mean, I agree the happy ending, but why a hover train? You got a lot of different things you can make a hover thing out of.
Hover
a train
horses?
Is a terrible idea.
Well, they had that special brace.
Is there anything anybody needs to plug? Shows or other podcasts that you're working on or that anybody?
I shot a web series recently. It's called Hashtag with Telefilms. It'll be coming out probably sometime this spring.
Okay.
Cool.
Great.
Depending on when this comes out, if it's anytime near C2E2, which is in Chicago here, if you're a Chicago native, there's a show called McSith that I think I plugged in some other podcasts, and we will be remounting it at C2E2. It's Macbeth in the Star Wars universe, so lightsabers and the Force, and it'll be fun.
Cool.
So if you're there, check it out.
Cool. I shot a short film called Chicagoan, where I play a asshole towards women, if you ever want to see what that looks like. This will be out in maybe 2 months, so that should be weird. Also, with my buddy over here, Sean, you want to plug it? You plug it.
Yeah, we did, me and Chris and our buddy Lawrence. Just me and Sean. We did F-Men coming out probably sometime this spring or summer. We're working on that now, and we're getting close.
And maybe a guy with a mustache in there who's a real jerk face.
Yeah.
What is
F in F-Men?
F-Men is like X-Men, but the F-Men. They're low power superheroes.
High powered
comedy. High power comedy.
I was like, a swear word, men.
Hopefully our tagline is not the funniest thing in that. If you have any comments, questions, protests, or topic suggestions, please email them to nerdoutcastpodcast@gmail.com. I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and talking with me today about the Back to the Future trilogy have been
Steven Scalabrine,
Sean Okerberg,
Jeremy Conner,
Pete Navas,
Bree Bartman.
Thank you, and have a good evening.